Hi, everybody. It's funny, I was trying to figure out how I was fitting in here, because first couple of presentations you heard about environmental disasters. Second presentation you heard about patient care disasters, I mean, difficult conditions, maximizing outcomes by best treatment. And I'm looking at an internal disaster. The internal disaster is that I look at physicians as being a really precious resource. And as you'll see through the presentation, and you already heard some reference to this, they are under increasing amount of stress and frustration. We don't have enough doctors now. When doctors leave the workforce prematurely, and we're going to have greater demands placed on our doctor population, there's an inequity here between what we need to provide and what we are able to provide. And my goal is to try to work with physicians to have them continue to enjoy what they're doing. I wear three or four different hats. I'm an internist. I actually live here in San Francisco. I work as a medical director for a hospital here in Northern California. The title is Medical Director of Clinical Efficiency and Care Management. How do you get our patients to get best patient care given the current environment? I also work as medical director for Physician Wellness Services. I passed out some information. That's a company that lives in Minneapolis, but it's nationwide. That really helps with physicians to try to keep them going. So as a more generic type of medical lecture, it's always the idea of what are the objectives. Just to give you a basic understanding of what stress is and how it's impacting our physicians, what's causing it, and what can we do about it to keep them working in the workforce and not change jobs or retire prematurely. This is hard to read, particularly when you're sitting in the back, but more and more we're seeing this literature coming out on the increasing amount of physician stress and burnout. And as you'll see in a few minutes, it reaches 40 to 50% of physicians. When you ask them on a profile, are they stressed and burned out, they do say yes. And I'm going to share with you some internal research that we have actually done. From the global research, 40% of surgeons report that they're burnt out, 30% of them are depressed. 50% of primary care physicians, again, I'm an internist, are stressed. A quarter of us are burnt out. It starts early. 50% of medical students report their burnout, and there's 11% suicidal ideation in medical students. 21% of medical students are depressed, and there's an increasing amount of physician suicides, which is tenfold compared to the general population. Now, this has major implications. I already talked about the manpower implications. The fear is that coming shortly, we're going to have 100,000 extra physicians that we're going to need to take care of our patient population. And there's certainly an impact of quality of care. One thing is you want the physician to continue to practice, but you really want them to practice so that the patients get what they need. And some of it is compliance and education, and some of it has to do with behaviors. And some of behaviors are influenced by stress, aggravation, anger, and so on and so forth. The literature, and some of this is based on some of the original literature that I've produced, a linkage between stress and dissatisfaction and bad quality care, a linkage of fatigue to medical errors, a linkage of stress to impaired surgical judgment and lapses of judgment, particularly in surgeons, and just think about the ramifications. It's certainly an impact of bad behaviors and being able to communicate and collaborate. One of the things I'll talk about is complexity of what's causing some of these issues. Disruptive behaviors are people doing things with disregard for the staff and for the patient, and very disruptive in the way of not communicating, not following through, not responding to patient needs. And it's definitely relationship to not only patient satisfaction, which is now a pay-for-performance incentive by Medicare, but also to litigation and malpractice. So are we under stress? I mean, the question is, are you under stress? And most people will say no, particularly physicians. I'm not under stress. We've brought up, when you go through medical school, it's like this territorial rite of passage. It's like hazing. It started very early on. It's now a way of my life. This is the way I live. And the other thing is, yeah, I guess I'm under stress, but you know what? I can control it. I can take care of it myself. And then one of the barriers to help, well, the first two is not under stress, two is I can take care of it myself. Ego, a lot of doctors, really, they're perfectionists. They want to do the best for their patient. And if they're not able to do the best, or somebody thinks they're not able to do the best, it's a slap on their ego. And you don't understand my world. How can you tell me I'm under stress? if I admit I'm under stress, you're going to tell somebody, so there's an issue around confidentiality. I don't have the time or priority to deal with these issues. And yeah, what? So when I'm under stress, I'm still a great doctor. So there's a lot of, obviously we don't have time to go through all of this. There's a lot of internal and external factors that cause people to behave the way they do. You heard a reference to the generation gap. Older physicians treat patients and have certain values and expectations than younger physicians. It's not unique to physicians. You know, generation X and Y values compared to the baby boomers. There's gender issues. There's culture and ethnicity issues about values, hierarchy, power, male-female relationships. And there's certainly issues around personality. And then there's career training, and I'll show you a slide on this next time. The way physicians are trained, I said they're hazed, and they get competency by technical competency and knowledge competency. They have very little training in personal skills, and which means they're not good collaborators, I'm generalizing, and not good communicators. And then a lot of what's going on in the physician environment, particularly over the past 5 to 10 years, is related to the external environment and the stress it causes on our physician population. So we did a survey, and we sent it out to 100,000 physicians across the United States. We got 2,000 physicians responding, and I'm going to take you through some of the results of the survey. We asked the physicians if they were under stress, and we had them rated on a 1 to 10 scale, and you can see that 87% of the physicians said that they were under increasing amounts of stress. And speaking of increasing amount of stress, we asked them to rate their stress now compared to 3 years ago, and you can see more than 50 to 60% said that they have significant more stress than they were experiencing 3 years ago. And then we said, you're under stress, what's causing it? Because we want to help you. So we're looking at what's causing them. We set up three different profiles. One is the external factors, and it's, if you're in the clinical arena, you understand this. The state of the U.S. economy is a factor for everybody. Greater intrusion from healthcare reform and from Medicare, telling you what you can and cannot do and reimbursing you less for what you are doing. The second causes of stress are work-related stress. The issues around paperwork, the issues around on-call schedules, the issues around being on this committee, that committee, the pressures to see somebody in 15 minutes when they really deserve 45 minutes of your time. Greater interference, much greater complexity. You know, in the inpatient sector, nobody has one physician. You've got six physicians taking care of every organ that's malfunctioning in these patients. And then we asked about personal life-related stresses, and a lot of that goes with the job. I can't relax. I can't sleep. I don't have any time to do this. I'm nervous all the time. I'm anxious all the time. And who do I turn to? So what are the consequences? So it's sort of self-revealing that physicians are getting frustrated with their job. It's different when they, you know, when you turn out and you have the idealism of what practice is, particularly if you're doing it for a while, and what it is now is a significant impact on poor job satisfaction. They're becoming more irritable, moody, angry, apathetic, sleep disturbances, negative impact on their physical health, negative impact on their mental health, and that can be a performance liability. There's the disaster. When physicians are not working up to snuff and they're either avoiding something or there's lapses in judgment or not following through, bad things happen to patients. So that's the physician side. What's the organization side? Well, you know, this bad type of morale can really affect our organizational culture. We're finding increasing turnover, poor retention, greater concerns about care coordination, negative impacts on patient care, and growing, you know, poor satisfaction and public relations and just our overall reputation. So what do the physicians want? They want to be happy. They want to be successful. They want a work-life balance. And, you know, this is one of the mandates of the Generation X and Generation Y, not a mandate of the older generation. So they want to be able to control their work hours. They want to be able to control their practice. They want to have time for rest and relaxation and wellness activities. And they want some administrative support. I want to take care of patients. You know, if you're putting me on this committee or you're asking me to fill out this record or do these administrative tasks, I don't have time to do it. So the organizations, they need to recognize, they need to look at what the physicians want and provide services for them to help them adjust appropriately. So then we ask, what are physicians themselves doing to try to combat stress and burnout? And you're going to get the usual answers. Well, I'm trying to exercise more. I'm trying to spend more time with my family. I'm trying to spend more time relaxing. I'm reading a book. I'm trying to go to movies. I'm playing music. The unfortunate thing is they're trying to do it. They don't have the time to make it a priority, or they think patient care is much more important than self-care. Then we asked, the physicians, what are your organizations doing? And they said, well, some of them are putting on, they give us exercise facilities, they're putting on wellness programs, they're providing workshops on stress management, anger management, time management. But interestingly, at the very bottom, only 15% of the physicians felt that their organization was actually doing anything to help them. So the hint here is, if you're part of an organization, don't leave it up to the physician to do it by themselves, because it's going to be much lower down on their priority list. So what do you want to do? It's really recognize and support. From the physician side, they need to be willing to open themselves up and admit that they're under stress and take positive steps in doing something about it. The simplest steps are to try to promote self-care, you know, good sleep, good nutrition, good exercise and wellness activities. But if you can't do it by yourself, you need to be open to support, but at the same time, remember those barriers, ego, confidentiality, I can take care of it myself. For the organizations, what they need to do is they need to recognize that this is a significant issue. And you need to be empathetic with what's going on in the physician world. And anytime you try to offer them a support service, it has to be done in a confidential manner. So what you can try to do as an organization is to provide assistance, operational assistance, clinical assistance, financial assistance, and then emotional assistance, which is some behavioral modification. So what we try to promote is education. Whether you do this internally or you hire an outside group or you do this through your wellness committee, provide educational courses on stress management, time management, emotional intelligence, and communication. In some organizations are actually, since the physician is such a precious resource and they're worried about that physician leaving, they're actually providing coaching opportunities. Somebody's sitting down one-on-one with that physician to help them better adjust to their environment. Some organizations have a physician EAP, an employee assistance program, and in some organizations the behavior is so bad you really need to provide some counseling and some therapy on behavioral modification. So if you are thinking about this and you're working as part of an organization and you see somebody who's on edge, what do you really want to try to do? You don't want to let them fester for so long that either something bad happens to them or their patient, or they're no longer doing their job, or in the final extent, they don't want to do their job anymore and they're going somewhere else or they're retiring or early. Early recognition and intervention, confidential and convenient. Informal support. If you can talk about it with your friends, your peers, your family, great. And then when you get more into the organizational support, part of it is, you know, when you're going through the recruitment, make sure that the physician is able to fit into your culture. And then we talk a lot about onboarding. When you get a new physician on board, take the time to talk to them about, how are you doing? Thank you. We welcome here. Let me tell you about our organization. Let me tell you some of the issues you're going to be dealing with, and let me tell you how we're going to try to help you. Offer assistance. Give them a nurse practitioner if they're really, really busy. Give them an administrative person to help with their medical records or administrative tasks. Provide some skill support, managing stress and burnout. Certainly promoting wellness. A lot of our wellness committees now are moving into that next generation. You know, we have this site. We want you to take off from 2 to 3 every day and come to our wellness facility, either to exercise or relaxation or coaching. And then I said, lastly, it's to provide real behavioral assistance. When burnout gets to depression and other real significant behavioral problems, we really need to address those issues. And the main goal at the end is that physicians are happy what they're doing, they're re-energized, their health is better, and the health of those around them are better. So just finishing up. In the end game, it's not just physicians. Physicians, nurses, all of our staff in the healthcare, we look at as a precious resource. Particularly, they've been there a while. They know the system. They know their peers. You don't want to let them get out of that system or get to the point where they're not functioning productively. They're just trying to do their job. Do everything that you can, whether it's structural support, clinical support, operational support, and on the other end, behavioral support. Raise levels of awareness and accountability. It's interesting, when we did this stress survey, if you ask the physician if they're under stress, they'll say no. Then when you start putting them through the survey, and they say, yeah, you know what? I'm not sleeping. Yeah, I am irritable. I am getting into some conflicts at home. Then they recognize that they are under stress. So you need to raise their levels of awareness, and you need to try to hold them accountable. They're definitely going to be resistant to interference and intrusion. They're going to be reluctant to seek outside help. So we have to take a proactive role in trying to make it easy for them to reach and engage us on some support. We always be conscious about confidentiality and convenience. Listen to what they say. It's not a one-way conversation. If physicians are stressed, you really need to listen. What's stressing you out? So you can't just say you need anger management, you need stress management. The idea is to find out what's going on, and if you can address those issues, you're much more likely to have a successful outcome from your intervention. It's all about the patient. It's all about the physician or the nurse or whatever. When people get stressed and burned out and tasks are not being completed, bad things happening to patients, we're all in here to do good patient care as far as quality and safety. Engage on their passion and energy and their satisfaction, which is why they went into the profession. Provide the necessary coaching and intervention. I put in here in italics, skilled personnel. You know, if we have a problem with the surgeon, they say, okay, we're going to talk to the chairman of the Department of Surgery to talk to our surgeon. Good luck. You know, because the Department of Surgery chairman may have his or her own difficulties. There is an art to doing some of these conversations through coaching. It's really, you know, you want to diffuse any anger and hostility, you want to promote some self-introspection, and you want to provide a positive outcome and not go in there with a punitive tone. Take some skill to do that, so not everybody has that. As I said, lastly, be proactive. If you see somebody acting out a little bit, take them aside and don't just let it fester, and then recognize and reward. And that's pretty much it. So.
Okay, thank you all for coming. We'll open this up for questions and answers. So if any of you have questions for our presenters, now is the time to ask them. Okay, you first.
I'll start off with the physician wellness services. What's the reaction been to your services by AMA and by the insurance company?
Well, I can tell you through the AMA and the Joint Commission, I have done a lot of work on disruptive behavior. If you look me up, you'll see all of that. So that's the real extreme. So both the AMA and the Joint Commission are very... The whole idea is to... patient safety is the primary concern. 70% of adverse events, which are bad things that happen to patients, are related to a communication gap. Most communication gaps are behavioral issues, not structural issues. So they're 100% supportive. Insurance companies, same idea. A bad thing happens to a patient, you're likely to get sued. So everybody would be in support of that.
Okay.
What is the reaction of physicians? Are they willing to participate in this?
That's the most important question. You know, I went through it. It's not me. Who are you to talk to me? It's salesmanship a little bit. A lot of times it has to be physician to physician. It has to be in a non-punitive, we're here to make life happy for you. So there's an art to it. When you do it correctly, it works. Most of the time. There's still going to be some walls up that you have to break down. If you have the wrong person doing it at the wrong time, then you're not going to have a good outcome. You can't do it in the heat of battle and then, you know, sitting over a patient's chart or the computer. It takes the right time, the right atmosphere, the right pitch. You know, the issue is, how are things going? Rather than, what a jerk you are. Why were you screaming at that patient and screaming at that nurse? So that's what I'm saying, is an art to it.
Yeah. Do you offer services directly to physicians or to organizations that employ the physicians?
You can do it through your own HR staff or medical staff services, fine. if you have talent in your HR department or you have effective talent in your wellness committee, you might be able to do it. Most organizations, bigger organizations, when they recognize it's a big issue, go outside, they bring in an employee assistance program, and the outsourced agency provides all those services.
Okay, in the page, too.
Oh, well, that's a whole other lecture. No, but I'll give you the quick answer. No, and congratulations. Well, it gets worse. I know. There are three things that are happening in medical schools right now. Well, two of them are before the fact. One is now, for the majors and the people who are coming into medical school, they're beginning to look more at sociology and humanities and not just pure science. So that tells you something. The second thing, I don't know when you took it, but the MedCats are changing. The MedCats is the Medical College Admission Test. It's not just science anymore. There's questions on humanity, organizational design, you know, that stuff. The third and most progressive thing is they recognize this right away. Freshman year, you are taught coping skills. You're taught personal communication skills. In Brigham, for instance, they have this prototype program. As a freshman medical school student, you're teamed up with a nurse, you're teamed up with a pharmacist, if they have an osteopath or they have a respiratory therapy school, you're teamed up with them right away, and your whole idea is to follow a patient through that project for that year and the next year. So they're beginning to get much more in tune with, it's more than just being smart and being a good technician. Slow to come, but yeah.
Yes.
Has it been looked at that perhaps a more compliant patient sticks with a diabetes doctor or primary care doctor that's in the recognized program, and that those who are less compliant perhaps leave that type of doctor more?
I couldn't tell you that directly. Some of the physicians who have gotten this recognition, well, I'll give you one example. There was one practice where they were in the inner city of Rochester in the Hispanic community. And this practice instituted medical group visits for the patients. And the interesting thing is, after 24 months, they saw an incredible drop in the average hemoglobin A1C for the entire practice, where they were before like about 9.5, 9.8, after 2 years, like they were in the mid-7s. And this was not just people that were in the group visits, but all of the other patients. And it was more or less engagement, which is part of this. Because you can't do this simply without having the patient buy into it at all. And that's part of, I mean, you're getting into what Dr. Rosenstein said about your communication, and you need to get into cultural competency too, and what does this patient really need to really want to engage in their care. And outside of diabetes, though, I can give you one example. We've got outreach workers in my program for prenatal care. We had one woman who had two kids out in a rural county. She was pregnant, and the house they lived in really was uninhabitable, and they lived in an automobile, basically. And before she would go for prenatal care, her number one wish was, can I get a swing set for my kids? And the social worker got her a swing set, and it was all downhill after that. It was great. She would go to all of her visits and everything. But the thing was, it's one patient at a time, and what is the hot button for that individual? And I mean, docs can have great systems, but if you don't engage the patient, it isn't going to happen. So I really can't give you the direct answer to that. I mean, if you've got a physician that's kind of like a drill sergeant and says, you know, you're going to lose 50 pounds or else don't come here, well, they're going to go out someplace else. Whereas if it's more trying to engage individuals in terms of their willingness to change and then maybe make small gains with them, that's where they're most effective.
Any other questions? Yes.
I'm going to let them answer.
It's theirs.
They can sign an autograph.
plan on making it available, and how and in what format is yet to be determined. But if you want to give me your information, we can let you know. But we ideally will have it publicly available.
And also,
because we should note that as a CDC-funded regional learning center, all of our trainings are publicly available, and they've been viewed and used by over 100,000 learners.
And then the slide that came out of the resource, also, I mean, I could just see with my whole staff, with the learning center, very small. It would just cover so much, so well.
But you bring up a point we've been discussing internally. How do we use the videos? I envision perhaps new employees picking one topic and just trying to keep a culture establish a culture for new workers.
Cross-training leadership development?
Yeah. And there are different ways that it could be utilized. But
I mean, it was such a great overview of essential function A, and also this is what happened. The real disaster. It doesn't go by the book.
It's an interesting connection to what you heard as the last presentation as well. In some ways that it ties in, if we could identify particularly senior leadership and management who may have the greatest needs, who may be at the most stressed, who feel like they're underappreciated, who need the kind of coaching that you heard about
exactly.
in a physician's practice, and this could serve as a mechanism of coaching as well and a support for, you know, management, people entering into it or already there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so for the whole conference,
I think these are available.
Yeah, I think the presentations are available online. Just some takeaways for me, since I have such a broad public health background, is that we need to really take care of our staff. So if we're talking about preparing for emergencies and dealing with our acute or our chronic disasters, and we just continue to neglect or take our workforce for granted, we're not going to be able to withstand the impact when, you know, big events happen such as Sandy and whatever it may be. So just making sure that we're continuing to coach our staff. The two-way communication came up a couple times. So really making sure that we're actively listening to our staff as well. And then also the professional development, making sure that we're providing professional development opportunities for staff. You know, a lot of times when budget cuts come up, it's like, okay, you can't go to this training, you can't go to this meeting, so on and so forth. But we still have staff that have unmet needs, so making sure that we make that a priority, figure out some way, shape, or form to make it happen. So, yes.
We do.
Yes. And, you know, normally when we have sessions, we keep them on schedule because you see how people pop in because they time it. So that's the only reason why we did that.
Yeah.